Dr. Deepak Chopra is known as one of the world's greatest leaders in the field of mind-body medicine, and he continues to transform our understanding of the meaning of health. Through his creation of the Chopra Center for Well-Being in California, he is revolutionizing common wisdom and the crucial connection between body, mind, spirit, and healing. His mission of bridging the technological miracles of the West with the wisdom of the East remains his chief goal, and he and his colleagues conduct public seminars and workshops providing training for healthcare professionals around the world. Dr. Chopra is a fellow of the American College of Physicians and a member of the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists. He is my special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Doctor, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm really good, George. How are you?
Oh, my pleasure. Your schedule continues to be very busy, as it has been over the past few years.
Yes, but I'm enjoying myself and that's what's current.
Good for you. And you know what? A lot of people who have read your very many books over the years have told me how much you have touched their lives, how much you have helped them with your writing. What I've always wanted to ask you, years ago I said to myself, if I ever have an opportunity to talk to you, one of the first questions will be is, what happened in your life? Was there anything profound that changed you, that got you into thinking the way you think now about all these various aspects of mind and body and spirit and healing?
I think the most important thing happened was that when I was practicing medicine in Boston, after I'd finished my training in internal medicine, I was struck by the fact that you could have two patients who had the same disease, took the same medication, saw the same doctor, and still could have completely different outcomes. One could recover completely, and the other might succumb to the disease and die.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to wonder what was going on. And then, you know, every physician who's been in practice for a while will see patients who recover and they're not supposed to. They have what is called a spontaneous remission. So, you know, they have a terminal illness, and according to everything you know, there's nothing you can do about it. And yet, for some inexplicable reason, they completely recover, which meant that there's some ability to heal in all of us, and we just don't know what it is. So we dismiss it because it's rare. But if it's rare, if it occurs, then that means there must be a mechanism. And if you're a scientist, then it is our job to figure out what that mechanism is. Because once you can figure it out in one person, then you can help somebody else with that.
Sure. Sure. Did you find that a lot of mainstream medicine, mainstream doctors and scientists probably wouldn't prescribe to something like this?
In the beginning, not. But, you know, we've seen big changes in the last 15 years. Now at the Chopra Center for Well-Being in California, we give courses for physicians. We certify them. And actually, our courses are approved for the Physicians Recognition Award by the American Medical Association. We give them through the University of California School of Medicine in San Diego. We have medical students coming through us. I personally have lectured at other medical schools, including Harvard. And so there's a big shift in the consciousness of physicians now.
And you're finding that the enrollment for the seminars continues to increase, which, of course, is a barometer for what's going on out there.
Right, and particularly for physicians and nurses, that's very gratifying.
This new book that you've written, I find to be absolutely fascinating, the spontaneous fulfillment of desire, but specifically the harnessing the infinite power of coincidence. It's ironic because I have all my life said to myself that, And we get to the end of the road the same way. I've said that there are no coincidences, that things happen because of synchronicity and there are reasons. And darn, as I read more and more of the book, and then as I got to the end, your views have been right on the button with that.
Well, thank you. You know, the word coincidence is not really a bad word. When you say just a coincidence, then we trivialize what is actually a miracle. Coincidence means to coincide. So when many events in different locations coincide around a meaning or a purpose, that's a coincidence. Similarly, the word synchronicity means, chronos means time, synchronous means synchronized in time. So when many incidents are synchronized in time around, again, a meaning or purpose, then we call it synchronicity. That word was first used by the Swiss psychologist Carl Jung, whose friend Wolfgang Pauli, who is a physicist, also called it meaningful correspondence. And, you know, my work is as a biologist, as a physician. It's obvious to anyone who looks at biological organisms that our cells work synchronistically. How else could a human body think thoughts, play a piano, kill germs, remove toxins, and make a baby all at once?
Yeah, exactly.
The only way it can do that is the cells meaningfully correspond and coincide and synchronize their activities with each other. And today physics is telling us that there's a level of nature where everything is connected with everything else. And when we experience a coincidence in our life, we've tapped into that for a brief moment. So, and that level of nature, the wisdom traditions, of course, call spirit. But, you know, physics calls it a non-local quantum mechanical level where everything corresponds to and is coinciding with and synchronizing with everything else.
I bet these episodes are occurring in people's lives all the time, but they're probably not aware of it, or it comes and it goes so quickly that they don't capture it.
They don't notice it, or they don't pay any attention to it, or they ignore it. And, you know, when you ask really successful people how they got where they got, they'll always say, I was lucky, or I happened to be in the right place at the right time, or God was on my side, or, you know, there were many coincidences. Religious traditions have called this the state of grace, where it seems like, you know, you're connected to some creative power that is orchestrating your intentions. Or you might say you're spontaneously having the fulfillment of your desires. Or, you know, if you don't believe in religion or God, you say it's like a cosmic computer is, you know, listening to my intentions and orchestrating their fulfillment.
I can envision that, too, a cosmic computer, albeit God or anything else, that's getting this done. Why is it for some people that this occurs more often than others?
It depends on your awareness and your openness to possibility. If you're the kind of person who's very constricted in your awareness, always worrying about what could go wrong or anticipating responses or working too hard in your planning, not in the moment but also always concerned about the future or the past, then it's unlikely that you will notice what's happening around you. So, you know, it does require a kind of a present moment awareness. That's one thing. Secondly, it requires getting in touch, you know, with your soul. Your soul is that part of yourself which is, in fact, non-local and connected with everything else. So when you're not ego-bound, when you're not looking for approval or disapproval, where you don't think of yourself as being inferior or superior, and you just basically have a song in your heart and you're lighthearted and you're anchored in the present, then it's much more likely to happen.
You're absolutely right. It seems when you just sit back and let events unfold, things generally happen for people,
yes,
as opposed to pushing and struggling and trying. And that's not to say we shouldn't prepare ourselves for things.
No, I mean, you know, you water a seed and then it grows, if provided the soil is fertile. You don't, you know, pull it out of the ground every day to see what's happening.
Exactly. I mean, like you. I mean, you're a doctor. You practiced. You went to school for a number of years. You needed to train yourself. You just weren't going to wake up one day and become a doctor. You had to do certain things. Yet I'm sure events unfolded for you because of your understanding of what was out there.
Right. But even there, you know, I mean, when I was a child, my father had been gone for a while, and I was my grandfather, and one day we got a telegram from my father that he had passed all his exams. He was in England training to be a cardiologist.
Mm-hmm.
That night, my grandfather took me out to see a movie, and he took me to a carnival, and he took me to a party, and then in the middle of the night, he died. And the next day, they cremated him, and he was gone. And, you know, even at 6 years, I began to wonder, do we have a soul? What happens to us after we die? How can you be going to the movies one day and the next day not be there?
Yeah.
So, you
yeah.
know, and that's later when I went to medical school, that was part of my search.
Was it a driving search for you when this occurred?
It was a quandary, and I didn't stop asking myself the question. I mean, you know, lots of children ask these questions, always. And, you know, they either don't get the answers or they're, you know, given some simplistic answer which they buy into. And for some reason, this became a driving obsession with me. And so, too, when I went to medical school, you know, how does the human body function? Why does it function the way it functions? How does... Where does our thinking come from? Is consciousness the product of the molecules, or molecules the product of consciousness? And these are things that I've been, you know, asking myself all these years.
Do we all possess this? I mean, is it a gift, or is it a natural thing in all of us?
It's a natural thing in all of us. Our, you know, that part of ourself which we call the soul is actually very, very knowledgeable about everything that exists. After all, at this moment, your soul, which is the animating force of life, is regulating your blood pressure, your heart rate, your immune function. It's doing a number of things. You know, it's the ultimate and supreme genius, and it mirrors the wisdom of the universe. It's doing that because it knows how to do it. The fact is, most of us get so caught up in external knowledge that we never get in touch with this intuitive, creative part of ourselves. All our insight, our intention, our imagination, our inspiration, our creativity, our sense of meaning, our purpose, understanding, decision-making, free will, these are aspects of a deeper part of ourselves. It's not just the mind. It's a deeper animating force of life that regulates our life more than we know.
And for so many people, it stays so bottled up. They just don't have the knowledge, or maybe sometimes the desire, to release that.
Yeah, or it's never occurred to them. You know, now several people are listening to us. I'm sure they're saying, you know, that's something I should be looking out for. And then they start on a journey.
About 10 million people are probably thinking that, listening to you right now. One of the things that you write in the book is that people sometimes are thinking of someone, and then lo and behold, the phone rings, or they walk in a store and they're thinking of someone, and they turn the aisle and bang, they run into somebody. What's causing that?
Well, you know, some very well-known phenomena that we know is, let's say, a mother and a baby are very close and very bonded spiritually and emotionally. When the baby cries with hunger, the mother's breast will leak with milk at that moment, and it doesn't matter where the baby is or the mother is. So that's, you know, that's a well-known phenomenon. When a human being and their dog are very close emotionally, when the human being decides to come home from their office or come home from their vacation, the dog's behavior will immediately change. We've done experiments on meditation when we take two people, take them into deep meditation, establish an emotional bond with them, and then you do what is called an evoked potential. You take a flashlight and you shine it in the eyes of one person. Both brains will respond with electricity, even though they're in different locations. And these people could be in Faraday chambers, which means there's no likelihood of energy signals going in or out. So there is a domain of consciousness or awareness, call it what you will, spirit, non-local, quantum, mechanical, reality, where everything is inseparably one, where space, time, energy, information, and matter all become one. So the example you give, you know, you're thinking of someone, they call you for that moment, in that particular case, you've accidentally bumped into that part of yourself, which we're calling the soul right now, which is connected to everything else. Now, if you could learn to do it consciously, then you would have a lot of immense power at your hands. And this is, you know, some people who are prayed for or pray, they see the effect of their prayers. And there are now studies that show that if you have a group of patients who are being prayed for and a group of patients who are not being prayed for, and they are not even aware that they're being prayed for or not being prayed for, then the outcome in terms of recovery is much higher statistically in those that are being prayed for. It's again the same thing. It's a non-local phenomenon. You can try it with seeds. You have two sets of seeds and you give them the same fertilizer, the same water, mm-hmm. the same soil. But in one case, you actually have an intention where you literally are praying for the seed to be healthy, that the growth and sprouting of that plant will be much faster. So the basic point is here is our thoughts are also part of the interconnectedness of the universe. Our thoughts are not just inside our head. They are, our intentions are part of the interwovenness and inseparability of everything that exists. Now, we can block that when we start to get worried and when our ego comes in the way.
Sure, or our temper.
Seeking approval and all that.
So when people get angry, let's say, or evil, they tend to block that.
They block that. Anytime you get emotional turbulence of any kind, when you get angry or you're feeling hostility or you feel resentment or grievances or anxiety or fear or guilt or depression, then you're blocking that part of yourself which is connected with everything else.
Deepak, can people who are evil use this gift for their own sick benefits?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a phenomenon in Australia amongst the Aborigines, and this is an important thing to talk about, where if you don't like a person, you go to a witch doctor who does a certain ritual with a kangaroo bone, and then he gives you the bone and he says, you can point this at your enemy. And within 24 hours, the enemy starts to have nausea and vomiting.
Oh my gosh.
Within 48 hours, they get dehydrated. In 1 week, they're dead. This is called the nocebo effect as opposed to the placebo effect. So also when you go to a doctor and the doctor, you know, is very impressive and talks with a lot of authority and says, Mrs. Smith, you have only 6 months to live because this is a very terrible disease. In a way, he's pointing the bone, and if she buys into that idea, her body will respond to that. So the fact is that intentions, both good and evil, can be powerful, but also collective expectations in a culture, in a society, are very important in determining the power of those intentions. For example, if I pointed a kangaroo bone at you, it wouldn't matter to you. But if a doctor said something to you, you know, that was very serious, then your body would respond even at the mention of the diagnosis.
Exactly. Stay with us. Deepak Chopra, my guest. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back with him in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
The After Dark newsletter is $39.95. Subscribe now and get your free CD of Art Bell and Malachi Martin. Call now 1-888-727-5505.